This is Desiree Hargis at the University of Texas at Austin. Today is October 1st, 2011, and today we are interviewing John Hartigan, rower, about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games. On the recorder now.
Okay. Tell me when to start.
You can start.
Okay. My name is John Hartigan. I was the coxswain for the rowing team for Wisconsin in the 1968 Olympics. I was born in 1940, and I was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But I grew up in Chicago after the war, 1945 up through about 1959. I've always loved sports, especially football and baseball, but I had to deal with a physical challenge. I was born with curvature of the spine, which limited my size and my ability to run and things like that. I was totally active, but as expected, I was limited as to the kind of baseball or football player I could be, and that was, in many ways, sort of frustrating. But I made up for it in grammar school and high school by becoming the manager of the football and the baseball teams. What was interesting is I think my mother said to me, she said, John, don't be upset. Maybe someday you'll go to a college and you can become a coxswain and steer a rowing show. So I listened to my mom and I said, okay, I'll think about it. And that sort of just passed out of my mind. But then after I graduated from high school, I was accepted at the University of Pennsylvania, which had a very strong and competent and good rowing team. And coincidentally, based on what my mother had said, one day I was on campus, and the head coach saw me and said, John, you'd make a perfect coxswain. And so what I did was I went out for the rowing team, and actually I did quite well. And I had a great career at the University of Pennsylvania as a coxswain. We won the Eastern Championships. We went to Henley. And we won a lot of races in the United States. So things went very well from that standpoint, and I was a full-fledged coxswain, and I was enjoying it. And things that had been liabilities for other sports, like my size and my light weight, were actually just what were needed to be a coxswain for the University of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically how I became a coxswain. And I had a successful career at Penn. Now, I graduated from college in 1963, but I went on to graduate school at the Wharton School, and I was able to continue with my rowing. I was involved with a number of the crews on Boathouse Row in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in 1964, 65, 66, and 67. And then, of course, the Olympics rolled around in 1968. And the question is, how did I make the Olympic team?
Yes.
Well, at that particular time, in 1968, April of 1968, the two best crews in the country were Harvard University and the University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And what they did was they had the Olympic trials in Long Beach, California, and Penn and Harvard competed. They were out there and they raced, and Harvard won the trial to be the U.S. rowing team, but they won it by a very small amount, less than half a second. I think it was 0.1 seconds. They had become the U.S. entry in the Olympics. The Penn oarsmen returned to Philadelphia, and they decided what they would do is, because there's was seven different events in rowing, they decided that they would compete in the trials for those other events. One particular event was the four with coxswain, and four of the oarsmen, Luther Jones, William Purdy, Tony Martin, and Gardner Cadwalder were in that four, but they needed a coxswain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recruited by the freshman coach at Penn, who was sort of coordinating the Olympic effort, Ted Nash, who has been involved and had been a medal winner in the Olympics, I believe, in 1960. And he has been involved in coaching crews in every Olympics since the 68 Olympics. He's a true Olympian and a great coach.
Mm-hmm.
So he recruited me, and he said, John, why don't you come with us and try out for the team? I said, I will. Well, lo and behold, we, first of all, raced in the national championships, and we won that. And then we went out to Long Beach, and we competed, and lo and behold, we won the trial, and were the U.S. entry in the four with Coxon for the Mexico Games.
Mm.
So, what happened next? Well, we came back. By that time, I was 28 years old, and I was working in Philadelphia. Well, went to my company. They were so proud that I'd made the Olympic team. I took a leave of absence to be with the crew. And this was in late August. And what we did was we went out to Gunnison, Colorado, to practice. The reason we did that was because of the altitude situation
mm-hmm.
in Philadelphia. I mean, excuse me, the altitude situation in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
We decided that the whole crew, in fact, and all of the powers that be had decided it would be good to work out in a high-altitude location to get acclimatized to both the weather and the altitude prior to racing in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out to Gunnison, Colorado, and we were there approximately 6 weeks. So that's basically what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
We raced in Gunnison. What was interesting is what it seemed like a positive of going out there actually in many ways became a liability because Gunnison was a very arid climate.
Oh.
And as a result, several of the oarsmen contracted upper respiratory infections, which actually followed them to when we went to Mexico, which was about 2 weeks before the games actually began.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So what's interesting is I was on a later team in 1975, which was the Pan Am team. And rather than going to altitude, which was also down in Mexico, we went right to Mexico and got acclimatized there. And actually, that was a better idea.
Mm.
But in retrospect, it probably would have been better if we had gone right to Mexico. As I said, I had taken a leave of absence from my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I was delighted that I had made the Olympic team. And I was enthralled because it was really fantastic.
Yeah, and how did your family and friends and community back home react to the news?
Oh, they were ecstatic for me. I mean, they know that I loved sports and that I'd always tried to see something. And the fact that I had made the Olympic team really was a great accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited, and I was very happy, and it was so positive. And it was funny how the Olympic team staff really treated me absolutely fantastic. They couldn't have been nicer. And for one thing, I had to wear custom clothes. So they realized that, you know, getting a stock uniform and things like that wasn't going to work for me. So they actually flew me from Gunnison, Colorado, to Denver, so I could work with their tailor. And it was such a nice thing because all my uniforms looked perfect on me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's because they were so nice, and, you know, they had thought about that. And that really made me feel great because when I marched in the parade and things like that, you know, I looked great.
Yeah.
But they were very, very nice, and I think that the everybody that was connected with the staff of the Olympic team that year was absolutely, they were just outstanding. They couldn't have been nicer.
Uh-huh.
And I was so enthused, and I really felt wonderful. Our crew felt wonderful, and things were just going great.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I can honestly tell you that the service of the U.S. Olympic team was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it.
That's good. That's really good to hear. So we're to Mexico City now.
Yeah.
And Can you describe your first impressions of Mexico City?
We went to the village. The village was, it was ultra-modern in sort of a Mexico style. It was, the accommodations were outstanding. It was like an apartment building. Somebody had told me that what they were going to do was make this a housing development after the games. And the facilities were absolutely very nice, outstanding. We sort of did dorm style in this apartment building, which was where all of the athletes stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I had a funny instance one day. I'm going up and down in the elevator, and I think the Queen Elizabeth, her husband, was in the village.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in the elevator, and the elevator goes up, and the door opens, and it's her husband, and I laughed, you know. And he got on board, and we came and went down, and it was just a very funny instance.
Yeah, definitely.
It was very good. But, no, I thought the accommodations were excellent, and the food was excellent also. They had a dining room where all the athletes ate, and we just enjoyed the services and everything, the equipment that we had, and all the facilities, the bedrooms, the beds, everything. They really spared no expense to make sure that the athletes were all comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting letters from my friends. I got letters from people at work, you know. Everybody was interested in how we were doing, and they were keeping tabs of me and all that sort of stuff. And I'd call up and speak to people and all that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
It was just great.
Yeah, it sounds like a really incredible experience.
Yeah.
Do you remember receiving a letter from the Harvard crew team about an Olympic project for human rights or positive?
Oh, I can tell you about that. Yeah, we were in Gunnison, Colorado. And we were approached by the Harvard crew that was there with us. And they were explaining what they were interested in doing. My personal feeling was, I said to them, look at guys, I really cannot be involved. I am here for one reason. I am here to represent the United States. And I'm here to win a medal. And I think that that's what my purpose here is to be. I said, you do whatever you want and all that sort of stuff. And I think the rest of my crew agreed with me. We felt that it was in the best interest of the country and the best interest of ourselves to represent the United States and to compete for a medal.
Mm-hmm. All right. And do you remember hearing anything about the Tlatelolco massacre?
Yes, there was some stuff in the newspapers about that. I think that happened about 5 or 6 days before the U.S. team came in. We flew in from Denver, and we flew into Mexico City. And some people on the bus were talking about that. But there was no evidence of it as we drove to the village.
Hmm.
I mean, everything was calm. You never would have known that it had happened.
Yeah.
I think what it is since then, with all Olympics, there seems to be some sort of controversy that develops because of the visibility of the games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I can say that I don't remember anything connected with that affecting our visit to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Or when we arrived.
Yeah. What were your impressions of the security measures there at the Olympic Village?
Well, of course, 1972, with what happened in Munich, that was a terrible thing. And, of course, in Mexico, Mexico was prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the security measures were almost invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were people, it was relaxed, it was a very pleasant environment. Everything seemed to be in order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to have a pass to get into the village and everything, but there was no disruption from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And so you said the food was good. Did you or anyone you know experience any foodborne illness or problems with drinking water?
No, surprisingly, we had all been warned about it. neither I nor anybody in my crew experienced any kind of upset.
Oh.
Like I said, we did have one oarsman who had developed an upper respiratory infection.
Yeah.
In Gunnison, but he was dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing from the standpoint of the typical Montezuma's revenge or anything like that. We didn't have that problem with my crew in my boat.
Well, very lucky.
Yeah, very lucky, yeah.
So what about the opening ceremony? Can you tell me about that?
I have to tell you that was one of the highlights of my life.
Hmm.
I can remember we got dressed, and the day before we'd had some parade practice. And they'd gone out in the parking lot outside the village, and they lined up everybody according to height. The girls were in front and the men were in back, and everybody was in line according to their height. Well, the advantage for me was I was in the front row because of my height.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then in front of me were the ladies, and then the flag carrier, the person carrying the flag.
Yeah.
I can remember that we had been practicing. We came back to the village, and it was the day of the opening ceremonies. And we boarded a bus and went to the ceremony. I can remember they lined all of the teams up, and it was like a quarter-mile walk, and all of the teams were lined up, ready to walk into the stadium. So we marched in, and there were Mexican citizens and people, everything, around. They were all cheering and all that sort of stuff. And as you got closer, you started to hear the music. And I can remember we walked in. You went down a long ramp, and then you went into a dark tunnel. And when you came out of the tunnel, you were in the stadium. And that was probably one of the most emotional moments of my life, because as we came in, you could see 60 or 70,000 people, and a lot of them were Americans that were cheering us. And it was such a wonderful moment. And I thought to myself, ye gods, John, you made it.
Hmm.
You know, you finally, after all those years of wanting to be in sports and all those years of crying, you finally made it.
Oh.
And it was just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, in many ways, we didn't win or anything, and the racing was great. That has to be one of the high points for me,
mm-hmm.
walking into the stadium.
That's what I've heard from many of the athletes that we've interviewed.
It was so profound. It was wonderful.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
So what can you tell me about your event and where it was held and how it went?
Okay. As I said, we were in the four with. That's four with coxswain, four oarsmen, and a coxswain. And it was held at Sochi Milko, which was a rowing course that had been carved out of the desert there. We raced, and we raced very strong. And we qualified in the quarterfinal, we qualified in the semifinal, and then we raced in the final. Unfortunately, we were not as fast as we had hoped. New Zealand won, East Germany was second, Switzerland was third, and we came in fifth by about half a second.
Hmm.
And that was, you know, in many ways, it was very sad for us because we had tried so hard. But I think the thing was that sort of passed because we realized that after the defeat by Harvard and things like that, this crew had really made a tremendous effort and a tremendous advance, and we had been successful,
mm-hmm.
from that standpoint. So I think everybody, the loss was tempered by the fact that we had really overcome a lot of obstacles to get to the Olympics, and we'd gotten to the final.
Definitely.
Yeah. Which made us among the best crews in the world.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'd take that any day.
Yeah, exactly.
So what did you do immediately after your event?
My my father and my sister had come down there. So we took an hour just to sort of recover emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point on, I was able to see my father and my sister, saw them. Then I went back to the village. All the guys in the crew, we had dinner together. And I think that after that, I went and slept for about 12 hours.
Oh, wow.
I was so tired, you know.
Yeah.
Tension and everything of competing. And it was just good. But then that last week, I think we competed in the first week. And that left the opportunity for me to become involved in the Olympics. I went to some events and just basically enjoyed the city.
Mm-hmm.
I went into Mexico City one day. The Mexican people couldn't have been nicer.
Mm-hmm.
They had my uniform on. They were very nice and very agreeable.
That's good. And that's what I've heard from everybody, that they were very welcoming.
Yeah, they really were excited about having the Olympic team and the Olympic events there, and they were very, very hospitable.
Wonderful. What events did you go to?
I went to, I think it was the steeplechase and a couple of track events.
Mm-hmm.
I can't exactly remember which ones they were.
Mm-hmm.
But and I did go, I think I went to one basketball game. That was about it. But in many ways, we had been training so hard for 4 to 5 months that in many ways, I was just great to relax.
Oh, I
spent a lot of time just in the village, you know, enjoying myself.
Uh-huh. Did you hang out at the pool?
I think there was a pool.
Uh-huh.
There was a pool there. I stood there. They had like a reception center where you get a cup of coffee or a drink. And I go over there, and I was just talking to the athletes.
Yeah.
It was, I was working at the time, so I realized that I ought to enjoy my vacation, because when I went back to Philadelphia, I'd have to go back to work.
Right, right. So, was there anyone on the team, on the U.S. team, that you were particularly close to?
I think I was pretty much close to the guys in my boat.
Mm-hmm.
Gardner, Cadwallader, Tony Martin. We all hung out together. We were pretty close, and it was just a good time. You know, we had been isolated in Gunnison.
Mm-hmm.
So we had not been with the rest of the team in Denver, for example. We only went into Denver for about 2 days to pick up our uniforms and then go on.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have a chance much to mix it up with any of the other squads.
Right. And what were your memories of the women athletes that were at those games, and what were those interactions like?
They were all very nice. I don't remember seeing any of the women's events,
mm-hmm.
but I know that they were very talented. They were all very pleasant and very nice. It was a great group of people to be with.
Yeah, it sounds
everybody was enjoying it. Everybody was having a good time. Whether you won or lost, you were really on vacation.
Right.
After your event.
Definitely.
Really enjoyable.
And were you aware of the gender verification or gender screening testing that was introduced?
You know, at the time I was not aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there was some things about that. I was aware of the drug testing.
Okay.
Because immediately following our event, one of us had to go in. It wasn't me. It was somebody else. Had to go in and just be tested for random testing for drugs.
Oh, wow.
And since this was my first Olympics, and in many ways my first international sports event,
mm-hmm.
It was a random test, you know, that they tested everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, they tested everybody at the finish, and it seemed routine.
It seemed okay?
Yeah, it seemed okay. It was very routine. It was a routine test that everybody had to go through.
Uh-huh.
As I remember.
Did you remember the person that that had to be tested? Do you remember him complaining about it or having any...
No. In fact, in one case, I had to be tested.
Oh.
I was randomly selected. I was the coxswain. And I was randomly selected. I went in, gave the sample. Everything was fine, and that was it. Okay. Didn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember having heard any rumors about other athletes or teams or...
No, there might have been some stuff about that, but I wasn't involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear anything. I was too busy enjoying myself and having fun.
Right.
The controversy, I was not very much involved in it at all.
Yeah, yeah. You said you interacted with the other athletes. Did you meet any other athletes from other countries, and what were those interactions like?
Those interactions were very nice. I can't remember their names, but it was, it's 43 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's remembering names and things like that. I interacted a lot with the other rowing teams.
Okay.
And some of the New Zealand Oars members had been in Philadelphia. They had gone on a world tour, and we remembered each other. You know, we'd have a beer or something together.
Yeah.
And we remembered each other, and it was a very good time, and we enjoyed ourselves. And we interacted. Basically, they had the kind of thing where there were places you could go sit down, and everybody would go in and mingle it up and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember meeting any athletes from the Soviet bloc?
Yes. I traded for a hammer and sickle stamp that they had. It was like a medallion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we couldn't understand each other in English, but, you know, he pointed to something on me that he wanted, and I pointed to something on him he wanted, and we switched it, and that was the end of it.
Ah.
You know.
Yeah. Were these the pins that you were trading, or...?
Well, they were pins, but they were all... The Russians had come with some patches.
Oh.
Hammer and sickle patches. And they were trading those for American pins.
Okay.
Pin trading was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Very enjoyable.
So, do you still have the patch that...
I still have the patch, and I still have a lot of my pins left. In fact, I still have my sweatsuit. And I still have my dress uniform. I still have all that stuff. I won't put it on, but, you know, I still have it all.
Uh-huh. That's neat.
It'll go into my estate.
Yeah.
Something like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So did you witness Tommy Smith and John Carlos, the salute that they did on the medal podium?
No, I didn't. How I learned about that. As I remember... it was a rainy night, and we had practiced during the day, and I came back to the village, and it was dark, and it was about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Sometimes you can be in the middle of something and not know that something is going on. What I mean by that is I came back, and I got off the bus, and there were some press people, and they said, "There's someone from the crew team." And they came up, running up to me, and they said, "Are you a member of the Harvard crew? And do you know about what happened?" I said, "No, I was at practice. I didn't know." So right away, when they realized that I didn't know anything, they ran away and tried to find somebody else.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. It's how you can be in the middle of something and not know what's going on.
That happens to me all the time.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And you're just dumbfounded as to what had happened, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you...
And I had basically, the Harvard crew, what I had said to them is, "Look at guys, I'm here to win a medal. I'm not interested in any other issues."
Mm-hmm.
So they backed off. You know, I didn't get involved in it at all.
Right. Well, when you did find out what was going on, how did you find out, and what was your reaction?
Well, all of a sudden, I know that there was a lot of discussion and a lot of controversy.
Mm.
And I think the only thing I want to say on that is I think the person that should be recognized for having quieted the whole situation is Jesse Owens.
Mm.
Because what Jesse Owens did is he basically got all of the parties together, and he sort of mediated. and he diffused that crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Because it got to the point where the Mexican officials were upset, and some of the other people were upset. But it was Jesse Owens that brought everything back. He brought down the level of intensity.
Right.
And he was the real hero of that.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to meet him or speak with him?
Yes, I did meet him. One day I was sitting down having a cup of coffee, and he came up to me and he says, "Hey, it's great that you're on the team." And I, because he lived in Chicago, and we both lived in Chicago, we, you know, did a few little Chicago stories, and then he went on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny, I saw him again in 1976. When I had been on the U.S. rowing team at the Montreal Olympics. And we went to the White House, and Jesse Owens was there, and he remembered me.
Oh, wow.
So we greeted, and I said, "How you doing?" He says, "I see you made it again. That's wonderful," you know.
Yeah.
But I can remember hearing about what was going on. There were a lot of rumors as to what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't been involved. I hadn't seen it.
Uh-huh.
But it got pretty dicey there, but it was Jesse Owens that brought everybody together, and I believe diffused that whole controversy.
That's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And what about the media? What were your impressions of the media? This was one of the first times that live TV and color TV were broadcasted around the world.
Yeah. Yes, in fact, ABC did the whole Olympics on their ABC network, and Jim McKay was there. I thought from the standpoint of the sports, everything was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I think ABC did a wonderful job. I remember saying that to McKay. I saw him one day, and I said, "Boy, you're doing a great job." I got a call from my mother, and she said, "We saw you on TV and everything, you know." And I think they were doing a great job. I think the Tommy Smith Juan Carlos incident, that became something outside of the TV.
Mm.
I think the press people and everything, that became a very big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was finally resolved. And as I said, I think, Jesse Owens, he was able to work with all of the parties involved, and they resolved it
mm-hmm.
as best they could.
Yeah. What about any record-setting events? Do you remember hearing about any of them while you were there?
Yeah, Bob Beamon. I remember hearing about Bob Beamon. I didn't see it, but I remember when he did that. And I can remember him and standing in the village, and everybody was gathering around him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought, so I said, "What was that?" And I was talking to somebody, and I said, "Oh, he just set the record in the high jump, mm-hmm. or the long jump."
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like I say, you know, just a wonderful event. I was very glad to be part of it.
Yeah. What about any other memorable or interesting events or experiences, maybe places that you went and visited in the city, or just anything else you can remember that sticks out in your mind?
I remember taking a tour of Mexico City, and we went out to look at the pyramids. What do I call them? The pyramids. The Aztec pyramids. I remember seeing that and how beautiful that was, and remember going to, there was a cathedral downtown, and looking at that, and I took a tour of the entire city, and the Mexican people couldn't have been nicer. They saw my uniform, they were very supportive, and it was very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Good time.
Wonderful.
And despite all the things that had gone on in the world that year, I mean, the Chicago situation, the Bobby Kennedy situation, the Martin Luther King situation, all of those things, the Mexican people really did an outstanding job of setting off the Olympics.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was really an outstanding event. And for me, the whole Olympic thing was fantastic, and I enjoyed it, but one of the things was it was basically something that kicked off my international career. in rowing. That was the first U.S. team I had made. And what happened was that I had made the 1968 team. Then in 1970, I went with Vesper Boat Club, and we were the representative at the World Rowing Championships up in Montreal. And then in 1974, I was the coxswain for the Light 8. We went to Switzerland and won the World Championship.
Wow.
And then I was on three Pan Am teams. 1975, we went back to Mexico City, won the gold medal on that. I was on the Pan Am team in 19... Well, I was on the Olympic team in 76, and then I was on the Pan Am team again in the four with in 1979 and 1983. And I finished off in 1986 going to the World Championships again in the lightweight eight. We qualified for the final, but that was it. So, I mean, the making the Olympic team in 1968 was the prelude to a great rowing career.
Yes, it kicked off a remarkable 20-year career. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky that my wife was so supportive.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how your training and competing affected your relationship with your family and your wife?
Actually, no. After I got back from the Olympics, my wife and I married in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in Philadelphia. And I kept up with the rowing. I continued to work at Smith Kline & French, which was a pharmaceutical company. I continued to row on the weekends and when I could. And I'd be selected for these teams. And in some cases, my wife went with me. She went to Switzerland. She went to Mexico. In some cases, she didn't go. But the trips were usually a week to 10 days. That was about it. And she was very supportive and allowed me to really have some fun with it.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
So I was... I'm very grateful to everybody that helped me to make the squad. I've fulfilled in my rowing career what I wanted to be, which was to compete and be athletic. And I never dreamed I'd make the Olympic team, and I did. In fact, I made it twice.
Uh-huh.
So I was very happy to be part of everything.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So looking back, did you have any big influences on your athletic career or your will to compete and make it to the Olympics?
Well, I'm very thankful for the two coaches I had. One was Joe Burke, who was the legendary coach of the University of Pennsylvania crew, and then Ted Nash, who I've known now since 1968. And I was basically on three teams with him. Pan Am teams and the Olympic team. And he is an outstanding coach. He continues to coach. He continues to, anybody that works with him has a great shot at making a U.S. team. And I'm fully thankful that I met him and that I've kept up my relationship with him and for all the things he did to help me become a member of the U.S. teams.
Mm.
And in fact, he's currently working with the this year's U.S. rowing team that's going to the Pan Am Games. I think it's in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he's had a very long career as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a gold medal winner in 1960.
Oh, amazing.
Then he's gone into coaching, and he's helped hundreds of people like myself make the Olympic team.
Yeah.
Not hundreds, but lots of them.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, I'd love to talk to him, too.
Yeah.
So, how do you think your life would have been different if you had not been in rowing and if you had not taken it to the elite level that you had?
Well, I wouldn't have made the Olympic team. And I think if my life had been different, I would have probably found something else. But I think I've had a wonderful experience, thanks to all the people I've rowed with and the coaches I've had.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife who supported me in doing it.
Mm-hmm. What about amateurism and the difference between amateurism in 1968 and amateurism now? Do you have any thoughts or feelings about that?
Oh, I think I can remember the way amateur was. It was basically very simple and to the point. You know, you were an amateur, you were not being paid for your sport. I think today, I don't know what the definition is, but I see a lot of athletes, snowboarders and things like that, who have been able to merchandise their careers. And that's fine. And apparently the Olympic code is supportive of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're able to do it, that's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a different world.
Yeah, yeah. And how were you able to finance your training and your travel for a competition?
Well, like, for example, it was paid for by the Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on the two Olympic teams, it was paid for by that.
Mm-hmm.
There are out-of-pocket costs and things like that. But, see, any trip I took in rowing was maybe a week or 10 days.
And your
exception of being on the Olympic team.
Right. And your employers were very supportive?
All of my company, Smith, Kline, and French, they were very supportive. In 1968, they let me take a leave of absence. And then, in some cases, I was able to use vacation on the trips.
That's wonderful that they were so supportive.
Yeah, they were very supportive. Well, they were my friends, and they were very supportive about that.
Mm-hmm.
I retired from that company.
Oh, wow. So how long did you end up working there?
Approximately 26 years.
Wow. And do you have any advice for someone who might want to make it to the Olympics in rowing or in another sport?
Okay, advice. I think train hard, set your goals high, but realize that you might make it and you might not make it. But take satisfaction in the effort. You know, I mean, when you compete in a race or anything like that, you've got an equal shot of winning or losing.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases.
Right.
If, for example, you don't make it, I would say try again. I tried out for the 1964 Olympic team, didn't make it, but I made it in 68.
Mm-hmm.
I tried in 72, didn't make it, but I made it in 76. Effort yields results.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what your goal is and that's what you want to do, try as hard as you can, but realize you might not make it this time, but you'll make it the next time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a learning experience connected with every effort. And I learned a lot of things in 1964 that I was able to put to practice in 1968. And lo and behold, I made it.
That's wonderful.
I was very happy.
A great, great piece of advice and a great story, too.
Yeah.
So, comparing the games, can you tell me about any significant comparisons or differences that you noticed?
Well, I think I went to two games. I went to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to Mexico for the Pan Am Games.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Montreal. In all cases, the particular Olympic village that they developed for the sports, everybody competing, I think was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, I think, beginning with the Mexico Games, controversy surrounding the sport started to enter. I mean, you had some of the issues connected with the 68 Games. 72, of course, was a real tragedy. In 76, there were some issues connected with Russia and the fact that I think that they were upset that, or maybe I've got my timing mixed up and everything, but 76, there were some issues connected with Russia's participation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all cooled, and I think that the games in London are going to be fantastic, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But we all live in a different world right now, and we hope that they go off without any incidents.
Right, right, definitely. And what was the impact of the 68 games on your life?
It was, as I said, marching into that stadium was probably one of the top moments of my life. Coming into that stadium out of the darkness, probably the greatest 10 seconds I'll ever have. It was just wonderful. I'm delighted with the effort that we made. I'm delighted that the people I met. And I'm thankful for all the support I've gotten over my career. And it was really the best of the best.
In your opinion, how or why were those games nationally or globally significant?
I think the advent of TV. I think television brought the Olympics into the homes of people. I mean, prior to that, the 52 games were not televised. The 48 games were not televised. The 56 games were not televised. The 60 games were televised marginally. But I think the fact is that people could see the games.
Right.
Media, I think that brought them into new focus for everybody.
Definitely. And what about the history? I mean, what significance to you does recording the history, your personal history or the history of individual lived experiences of those games, what does that mean to you or is it important to you or your family?
Well, I'm delighted to participate in this. I hope that I've given a very positive view as to how wonderful it really was and what a wonderful experience was. And that it's a wonderful experience that is well worth the effort. And I hope for people that look at it or listen to what I have to say, I hope they realize that making the Olympic team is a wonderful experience. And if there's a young person out there that's thinking about it, I hope they go into it wholeheartedly. Because it's unforgettable and it's wonderful.
Well, John, listening...
Is that word too much?
Yeah. John, well, listening to your recollections has definitely been inspiring to me. It was wonderful to hear about them. And is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about?
No, I wish you the best. And what is the next step now? Do you send me a transcript?
Yes, and let me tell you about that. I'm just going to stop the recording, and I'll tell you about the process.